The focus of the next three episodes is pediatric cancer and HPV. In this episode, we'll be joined by Dr. Renata Nemechek, a pediatric hematologist-oncologist, and Dr. Mort Murray, who you were introduced to in episode 3, will also be a part of this discussion. We'll begin our conversation by learning about the differences in which cancer presents itself in children versus adults. But before all of that, let's get to know a little bit more about Dr. Nemechek.
So my name's Renata Nemechek. I am originally from Puerto Rico. I have been in Oregon since 2005. I grew up in the island, and then I did medical school there and moved to the U.S. for medical training. Met my husband in Ohio and Cleveland, and then moved to the Northwest for more training. And we've been here since then. I am a pediatric hematologist-oncologist, which is a cancer specialist for children and blood disorders.
Okay.
And I particularly specialize on something called bone marrow transplant, which is people that have had cancers or diseases that have not gone away with regular therapy, and they need essentially their immune system replaced by somebody else's. But I also take care of kids with cancer with my team.
Okay. So you could have gone into any profession. What led you to this work specifically, and how far back did you realize, okay, this is what I want to get into?
I was in 10th grade.
Okay.
I just fell in love with biology and how things work. I've always been a thinker, and every time I learned something about the human body, I would have a second question, a third question, a fourth question. I was really lucky to be around really good teachers and really good role models that showed me the way. But I'm the first doctor in my family, so
okay.
I didn't have that at home. But down the way, just found amazing mentorship through my years and still. And I just fell in love with it. But cancer in particular was, I had an uncle that died of leukemia when I was very little. And I remember it was a countryside in Puerto Rico that them saying, oh, you know, he can't get any more treatment because he cannot get a bone marrow transplant. And I didn't know what that was at the time. But it kind of stuck there for many years.
Right. And we're glad that it did stick with you. So what is the difference in how cancer presents itself for children and adults? Yeah. I mean, traditionally we think, you know, children are younger, they're going to be more fit, their cells are in better condition, you know, they should be able to handle things a lot better. But that isn't the case. It isn't always the case, depending on what the ailment is. So could you tell us some of the differences?
Yeah, so cancer is less common in children than in adults, way less common. For every child that gets diagnosed with cancer, more than 20 get diagnosed in the adult world.
Wow.
The cancer presents different and similar, depending on what it is. But the most common cancer in children is acute leukemia, which is a blood cancer. And it can present with people feeling tired, bruising, very pale, or not feeling like they have energy, fevers, infection. It can almost look like a viral illness until they go to the doctor. And we find that in their blood counts, when we draw blood, things are not normal.
Okay.
So that's something that can happen in adults, too. And different types of leukemia happen in children versus adults. And then the second most common cancer in kids is brain cancer, brain tumors. So it's very different to what we hear in the community about cancers, you know, cervical cancer and breast and prostate. For children, it just presents in different sites in a different way.
So you mentioned different types of leukemia. Are all leukemias considered cancer?
Yeah.
Okay.
So leukemia, it's Latin for cancer of the blood or abnormal growth of the blood.
Okay.
There are different types, but the most common in children, it's called acute lymphoblastic leukemia, which are the cells that fight infections in our body. And there's another type called acute myeloid leukemia, which is just a different type of blood cell.
Okay.
And they kind of present the same way. Okay. They all need chemotherapy, and sometimes they need to be treated with bone marrow transplant.
Okay. Dr. Murray explains the various ways cancer can present itself at different stages in a child's life and gives an additional perspective on the differences in pediatric and adult cases.
So, you know, if you're 3 to 5, there are certain cancers that would tend to be more common in that age group. If you're 3 to 5 and a boy versus a girl, there's a certain cancer type you might expect to see in you versus the boy, right? Those kinds of variations and considerations. And then also within those age groups, you know, you'll have certain cancers that present very prominently, I like to say, or, you know, with the presence of something that's actually physically like visible or touchable, mm-hmm. a mass, a tumor, right? And then within those age groups, certain ones that you may not really have any sense of what's going on or any sense of, you know, that there is even a cancer, right? I think one of the presentations that we always applaud parents for is, you know, really recognizing when something is different about your child that persists, right? So, you know, you have a kid who starts complaining about stomach pain, and then you usually don't complain about stomach pain, and that stomach pain persists and persists and persists, and you feel like you've done everything for it, and this child is still bringing this complaint to you, when then usually wouldn't be complaining about it. That parent who goes the next step and says, let's dig deeper, let's go to somebody new, let's look further. You know, it's not a guarantee that, hey, this is cancer, but it's that willingness to pursue, you know, and explore more that often leads to us finding out, oh, you know, this individual did have a cancer presentation. It was so vague, so subtle that there was no other way to tell it besides this complaint, or this, you know, this very vague presentation. Whereas in my experience with adult cancers, it tends to be subtle, but it hits hard. One of the key differences between adults and children is we know how to articulate and we know how to communicate our needs. Right?
Okay.
So a young child who doesn't have that ability and you're guessing or trying to figure it out as a parent, whereas an adult who recognizes the symptoms, senses it, and attributes it to something else, but knows is there in the background.
Yeah.
And doesn't come forward and articulate that until it hits a critical mass. I think that's one of the big differences.
Aneta explains how early detection in children can be kind of tricky. We have been talking about early detection. And as cancer is starting to present itself earlier in adults, initially, you know, I wasn't thinking about getting a screening till, you know, 55, 60, things like that. It's a complete difference now. And then as I got a little older, it was like, okay, 50. And then now they're saying, if you have a history of cancer in your family, you should be getting screened at 45. So are there screenings that we should be doing for our kids? Are there different things that we should be looking for? Is it really up to the child telling us they're in pain? I mean, I feel like there are, it can get a little muddy just having your child tell you, I'm feeling this, I'm feeling that. Sometimes it's not always accurate. They don't recall what they've done throughout the day. Well, my arm hurts. Did you bump against something? Oh, well, I might have. You know, what are some of the ways that we can be a little bit more vigilant when it comes to early detection in children?
Yeah, so contrary to cancer in adults, early detection in children is tricky. Acute leukemia is a disorder of your entire body. And it happens, as the name implies, acutely. It's not something that you sit in there for really long. It would be for breast or prostate, for example, that you could screen and find early.
Right.
Because it's more spread when it comes to begin with, because your blood is everywhere. So there are no early detection screenings for cancer in children because of the nature of the cancer. What I tell people that ask me, how can I prevent cancer in children, and this happens a lot, you know, when something like this happens to your kid, the first thing you think about is, what did I do? What did I miss? Now, did I do something wrong? And I can assure you that you did not. Cancer in children is, if you think about our body as a factory, our factory is continuously running.
Yeah.
And when your factory continuously runs, sometimes it can trip on itself and cause something bad. And that is exactly how cancer in kids happens. There's a cell that is meant to be normal, that is supposed to be born, mature, die, flush out of the system. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how we turn around as humans. And in kids or in cancer, there would be that cell that trips on itself. And instead of growing and maturing, just grows and grows and grows in the immature state.
Oh.
And that's how the cancer in children in the majority of the times happens.
Okay.
So there's no way that we can really detect that early. And there have been tons of studies trying to figure out if we can predict who's going to get leukemia. And we really don't have that yet.
Being a parent, I wanted to know if there were any contributing factors to childhood cancer. Is it hereditary? Does our diet play a factor? Aneta clears all of that up for me. After that, we switch gears to talk a little bit about the stages of pediatric cancer treatment. Is there any factor of it being hereditary?
Usually not. Okay. There are some very rare cases where you inherit a predisposition to cancer in kids.
Okay.
They are not, can count them with a hand, maybe two.
Right.
But in general, the kid will be the first person in the family with childhood cancer.
Gotcha.
And that doesn't mean you're going to have another person with that
okay.
family.
Okay. All right.
But there's also no reason why that happens other than we are human factories and sometimes we have a mistake happen. So nothing you eat, nothing you don't eat.
Okay.
Nothing you did or didn't do as a parent or as a kid causes any of the childhood cancers that we know of.
You definitely answered my next question, if there was any external factors, environmental factors, anything that played into leukemia. Yeah.
And I would say, you know, we are always studying this because, you know, we do have a lot of contaminants in the world and
right.
all of that. So we have done those studies, and those studies are being done all the time.
Wow.
Whenever we see a cancer happening in more frequency than we would expect it, there's always investigations on that. And we've really never been able to point at anything. What I tell people, you know, use common sense. You know, you do not want to be around pesticides. You do not want to be
right.
contaminated places if you can help yourself.
Right.
In most cases, cancer in children, it's a curable disease.
That's great news. I mean, as fearful as we are of the diagnosis, I think what's missing a lot from the conversation is how the survival rate is going up across all, you know, age groups. What are the stages of treatment? Can you talk about, like, the process and how that goes? Like, how many weeks does it last? Of course, I'm sure it's going to be contingent on the particular case, but...
Yeah, so, I mean, the first step is getting to a doctor, right? And part of my work and the work of a lot of people at the night, it's making sure whoever is sitting on the state, wherever they are sitting on the state, with whatever insurance they have on the state,
right.
gets to that point, right? So, getting diagnosis, step one. So your pediatrician or your primary doctor, knowing what to look for, parents bringing up to attention, and someone going to the doctor as soon as possible. It's step one by far. I would say that is what we called in pediatrics early detection.
Okay.
Show up at time. And then after that, depending on the cancer, as you mentioned, it's going to look very different.
Okay.
In the case of acute leukemia, people usually come into the hospital to start treatment. Depending on the type of leukemia, they can be in the hospital anywhere between a week to sometimes a month. It really depends on the type, because what we first need to do is sort out exactly what type of cancer you have. We look very carefully into genetics and prognostic factors and everything that can indicate, you know, that we need to treat you more aggressive or less aggressive. And then we formulate a treatment plan. As you can imagine, that entire time in the hospital is also education. People that come to us are scared, they're
yeah.
tired, and they don't know what the next step is. So we spend a lot of time connecting with families, making sure we form a team with them before that process starts. So as much in a hurry as I am to start treatment, I really want to make sure that whoever I have in my care has that understanding, and it's all in. With us rather than us doing stuff to them.
Right.
So, and then we start usually chemotherapy. Very infrequently in children, but sometimes we need it. We have to use radiation therapy.
Okay.
And that is usually in cases where there's a mass or something that we need to shrink. And we know that chemotherapy is just not going to do that. And then we, when you're ready to go to the out of the hospital, you go out of the hospital, and then you remain coming to the oncology clinic or the cancer clinic. Anywhere between, you know, once a week to once a month, depending on what your regimen for chemotherapy is.
Okay.
And the treatment for cancer in kids, again, varies depending on type of cancer. And it can be anywhere from about 6 months if you need chemotherapy to 3.5 years. And in the case of acute leukemia, where we need to keep treating you with less intense but enough chemotherapy to make sure the disease doesn't come back. Blood has a unique way to sneak around us, right? So we have to kind of assume that it's everywhere and hiding from us. So it really depends on the type of cancer. But more importantly for kids, it's end of therapy. And this survivorship issue that I'm talking about. Once we're done with what we have to do, which none of us is happy that we have to do, right? I wish there would be something we could do that would involve so much time and so much risk. But when we're done, we have a kid that needs to get back to where they were when all this started.
Right.
And that transition back to being a normal kid can take some time for some families. You're traumatized, you're scared. We keep looking and making sure your cancer doesn't come back. So that always comes back to the family. But we have a role in making sure kids move on to keep going to school, to connect with a pediatrician again and keep their care they were having and just be normal kids and follow them over time. Because as we have more survivors, now we have adults that had treatment when they were kids.
Mort explains supportive care and the important steps necessary to get children back to their normal state of function.
As far as steps in recovery, I feel like you're referring to more the idea of you've gone through, this treatment process, this cancer, you've gotten chemo or whatever it needs to be. Maybe you got a transplant because this wasn't something that we could cure with just chemo alone, or you got some radiation. And now you're at the point, let's say you're cured. What is the process for supporting you and helping you fully recover and get back to a normal life of being who you are before this happened? Is that what you're getting?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. To be honest, at that point, really, the biggest focus and the key to all of it is supportive care. What are the things that we can do that enable you to move forward and become as functional and as productive as you were before this diagnosis and before this disease process and this experience, right? And so a lot of the things that we're really focused on is just, being able to recover your physical abilities, being able to be, and again, we're talking about children here in a lot of cases, and we're talking about a wide spectrum of ages, right? We're talking about young children who maybe can't do a whole lot for themselves at all in this point in life.
Right.
And then we're talking about older kids who may be completely independent and functional. They may be 17, 18, 19 years old, right? So ultimately, the goal is the same for all of them. We want them to be able to return back to their normal state of function.
Right.
After the chemo's had its effects, after the radiation has had its effects, after the transplant has had its effects, are they back to functioning, behaving, and existing in the same scope that they were before this all happened? And when we can accomplish that, we say that's we're highly successful.
Okay.
And that we've done what we came to do. And we have somebody who's not only cured, but back to being functional and an equivalent contribution to society that they were before.
Subscribe so you don't miss an episode of Finding Hope, Cancer Screening is the Future, available everywhere you listen to podcasts. Presented by OHSU Knight Cancer Institute. For more information on the OHSU Knight Cancer Institute, visit www.ohsu.edu/Knight-Cancer-Institute.